वर्तमान के सवा चार भक्त विरांत गोस्वामी महाराज पार की जाए भगवान विष्णु पाद परमहंस प्रभुचायस्तार शिष्यमान श्री भक्ति श्रांत संत गोस्वामी महाराज पार की जाए महाराज गोपी वैष्णव की जाए नमचार्य हरिवास्ता कौर की जाए प्रेन्द्र गौ श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रवृत्त आनंद श्री अद्वैत के रारा शिवस्त्र गौरवंत वृंद की जाए श्री श्री रारा कृष्ण गोपी गोपना श्याम कुंवर कुंड गिर गोवराम की जाए श्री वृंदावन धाम की जाए श्री माथुर धाम की जाए श्री नवद्वीप मायापुर धाम की जाए श्री गंगा माया की जाए जमुना माया की जाए तुलसी महारानी की जाए भक्ति देव की जाए समवेद भक्तवृंद की जाए गोप्रेम आनंद आलोय से समद बौरिस आलोय से समद बौरिस आलोय से समद बौरिस आलोय से श्री गुरु श्री गौरांग आलोय से श्री गुरु श्री गौरांग ज्ञानतिमृन्दस्य ज्ञानाज्ञानशलाकाय चाक्षुरुमिलतामीना तस्मात् श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यामृं विस्तां चाप्तां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कृता मायां ददाति संवदन्तिकां वन्देहां श्रीगुरु श्रीयतावरकमलं श्रीगुरुवैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां सगजातां सगनाद्वग्नतां वितां तां सजीवं सर्वायतां सावधूतां पुरीजनासहितं श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णापदं सगनालित्य शिवशाकनवंश्च हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबान्धु जगत्पते गोपीशा गोपीशाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोस्तुते तात कंचन गौरांगे राधे वृंदावनेश्वरे विषभानुसुत देवे प्राणमानि हरि प्रिये वांछकपातृभ्यः कृपासिन्धुभ्यः च त्वदीयानां भावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव श्री गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे So reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, this is from the sixth chapter, text number 7. Jitātmanā prasantasya paramātma samāhita sitoshna sukha dukkeshu tapma mana pamānayo. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor are all the same. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Actually, every living entity is intended to abide by the dictation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated in everyone's heart as Paramatma. When the mind is misled by the external illusionary energy, one becomes entangled in materialistic activities. Therefore, as soon as one's mind is controlled through one of the yoga systems, one should be considered to have already reached the destination. One has to abide by superior dictation. When one's mind is fixed on the superior nature, he has no alternative but to follow the dictation of the Supreme. The mind must admit some superior dictation and follow it. The effect of controlling the mind is that one automatically follows the dictation of the Paramatma or Supersoul. Because this transcendental position is at once achieved by one who is in Krishna consciousness, the devotee of the Lord is unaffected by the dualities of material existence, namely distress and happiness, cold and heat. This state is practically samadhi, or absorption in the Supreme. So the previous verse is for him, two verses actually. One must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. Prabhupada explains, the word Atma denotes body, mind and soul depending upon different circumstances. In the yoga system, the mind and the conditioned soul are especially important, since the mind is the central point of yoga practice. Atma refers here to the mind. The purpose of the yoga system is to control the mind and to draw it away from attachment to sense objects. It is stressed therein that the mind must be so trained that it can deliver the conditioned soul from the mire of nations. In the material existence, one is subject to the influence of the mind and the senses. In fact, the pure soul is entangled in the material world because the mind is involved with the false ego, which desires to lord it over the material nature. Therefore, the mind should be trained so that it will not be attracted by the glitter of material nature. And in this way, the conditioned soul may be saved. One should not degrade oneself by attraction to sense objects. The more one is attracted by sense objects, the more one becomes entangled in material existence. The best way to disentangle oneself is to always engage the mind in Krishna consciousness. The word he is used for emphasizing this point, that one must do this. It is also said, for man, mind is the cause of bondage and mind is the cause of liberation. Mind absorbed in sense objects is the cause of bondage, and mind detached from the sense objects is the cause of liberation. Therefore, the mind which is always engaged in Krishna consciousness is the cause of supreme liberation. For him who has conquered the mind is the best of friends, but for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. So, this Dhyana Yoga, it deals specifically with this purpose of identification with the soul in relationship to the mind. The mind is the, if you like, is the central focus of the senses. The material body is made up of senses. Actual body means senses, because the living entity is actually sentient. We are all sentient. So naturally, we have a manifestation of sentience, and that is the body. The body is the manifestation of our sentient relationship with this world. So according to that sentient consciousness, we relate. At the moment, our sentience, our consciousness, is manifested through two types of energies. One is a subtle energy and one is gross energy. So the subtle energy is the mind, the intelligence, and the false ego. The mind is the central sense. It's a subtle sense, so therefore it's very difficult to describe it. No one's ever actually seen a mind. You can't actually see it. So therefore it's very difficult to deal with. The body you can see. If your body becomes engaged in some activity that is, inauspicious, or your body is engaged in something which is not good, you can see it. You can automatically see that this thing is not very auspicious. But when your mind is engaged in something which is not good, you can't see it, because it's too subtle, just like the wind. Actually, Krishna says to Arjuna that it is like trying to... Arjuna says to Krishna. Arjuna says, but Krishna, it would be easier to control the wind, because the effect of the wind, you can see. At least you know the wind exists. But the mind is so powerful, it's much more subtler than even the wind. Wind is actually air, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind. So mind is even subtler than ether. So therefore, that's why it says that the mind, it can be your greatest friend or it can be your greatest enemy. But what is the nature of the mind? Because after all, if your mind can be your friend or your enemy, then you should get to know what is the mind. That is the whole business of the yoga system, actually, is to understand how the mind is working, because the mind is very tricky. Because within the mind is the false ego. Ahankara vimudatma. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, ahankara vimuda. Vimuda means a mule, an ass. Krishna uses very strong language. He says, from within the mind you have a false ego. From that false ego one becomes a fool. So therefore, the false ego of the mind is the greatest enemy of the soul. You see, that is the actual enemy. There is an enemy there. Just like in this world, we all have friends, but we also have enemies. There are things which are hostile to our happiness. Just like weather conditions. Weather conditions are hostile, so we make arrangements. We build a house, we make a roof, we make central heating, we make nice soft furniture. You see, because the weather is hostile. So in the material world there are these things, adi devaka klesha, adi bhautika klesha, adi atmika klesha. Adidevaka, Adiatmaka, Adibhautika, they're all enemies. They're our enemies. They're hostile to our actual happiness. So as Adibhautika, Adidevaka, Adiatmaka, they are very powerful energies, because we see that Adidevaka means the devakas. These are the planets within this universe, the devas, the planets. They are influencing. By planetary influence, we can become depressed, suicidal, we can become schizophrenic, we can become mad, we can become kings, we can become rulers of the planet, we can become cockroaches. Just how the planets are moving. You see, this whole universe is such a wonderful cosmic arrangement, such a wonderful cosmic machine, that everything is moving, and as it moves, every single thing is causing a certain influence on the living entity. Just like in your body, you have a molecular structure. This is called, in your body, you have a molecular, how those molecules are moving, how those little things, that's how your whole body is functioning, isn't it? So the universe is also a body of Vishnu. And therefore, everything within the universe is working in a perfect order. So therefore, as soon as there is an inauspicious adjustment of the planets, then automatically something inauspicious comes. Prabhupada says the demigods rule completely and utterly the living entity. We are all subjected to influence of devaka. Devaka means divine arrangement, superior authority. Any type of superior authority within the universe, this is called devaka. So therefore we see that the body that we get, the just like the sun, now the sun is coming out more, so people become more active. You see? It's very practical, scientific. The more sunshine comes, the more active people become. I didn't see all these people last Sunday running around. You see? So how planet is moving, that planet is become stronger influence than you can see practically how immediately the sun, because the sun is giving sunshine, sunshine is giving us, it gives our body some heat, it gives us inspiration, it gives illumination, it gives so many things like that. So therefore, when there is an increase in that planet, then people can go out and enjoy in a certain way. So that's a crude example. So therefore, we can understand that the living entity is subjected to so many different influences. You see, the difference between us and God is He is the subjector and we are the subjected. Through His energies, He is subjecting us to certain conditions. The living entity is living within certain conditions. And as soon as these conditions are a little bit unfavorable, we become disturbed. Just like if there's an increase in bile or an increase in mucus, automatically you become disturbed. Your body, you can develop pneumonia, you can develop tuberculosis, so many things are coming just from too much of... So everything is very carefully balanced. And there is interaction between all of these energies, these different energies, just like the consciousness is trying to relate to the body through the medium of the mind. We are trying to relate through the medium of the mind. So the mind is very powerful. So the business of the mind is to accept everything which is favorable. You see, we are always searching out that which is favorable. So therefore, in the material world, we want to find some favorable condition. And we see that when there's unfavorable condition, then the nature of the mind is to reject. So the business of the mind is accepting and rejecting. That's all the mind does, basically. It accepts and rejects. And then through the power of discrimination... You see, just like in the human form of life, our power of discrimination is more developed. So we have more development of discrimination. So therefore, we are actually making adjustment. You know what discrimination means? Just like we use the word responsibility. Responsibility, the ability to respond. You see, the ability to respond. So the difference between the human and the animal is that the human can respond. But the animal cannot. An animal's ability to respond is very limited. If you take any animal and you subject them to some condition, his ability to respond is actually just like if you put a tiger. Even a tiger is very powerful, but if you put him in a cage, he can't negotiate. He doesn't know by sweet talking you and making friends that you let him go, or by someone doing some deal with you. He can't do anything. So he's subjected because his ability to respond to that situation is very limited. So in the material world, we are being subjected to so many conditions, but our ability to respond is actually dependent upon our degree of intelligence. The general tendency is the general tendency of the mind is that let me make some adjustment. Let me make some adjustment. Everyone is trying to make some adjustment. Just like we see in our daily lives, we're always trying to make an adjustment. Let me make an adjustment for this. Let me make an adjustment. Therefore, Krishna says, for one who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. Because there's no more need of adjustment. You see? The reason your mind is disturbed is because you're trying to make adjustments. You think that you can control the situation. That's the nature of intelligence. Intelligence means that I can control the situation. That's why you see in Western civilizations, they're intelligent people, so they try to control. But what they don't understand is that they can never control, because their ability to manipulate, their ability to actually control is very tiny. Very tiny, just like they have created 747 Jumbo. Now 747 Jumbo is a wonderful creation. But if you relate it to a planet, what is its ability? You see, Krishna has created this planet. That's a big jumbo, isn't it? And it doesn't even need refueling. You don't see where another planet comes up and pumps some fuel into it and keeps it going, you see? It's not that it needs to be serviced every few years. So we see that in the material world, the tendency is that because people are intelligent, they want to make adjustments. But unfortunately, because the mind, consciousness, is manifested externally, at the moment we are being manifested externally, and on that external plane, we are trying to subjugate, we are trying to bring things under our subjugation, under our control. This is called struggle for existence. As Krishna says in the Gita, Mamaya Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Mamasa Stani Indriyani Prakriti Stani Karshati. He said all of these living entities, they are my parts and they are my parcels, and they are in me and they are mine. But due to conditional life, notice his wording, due to conditional life. In other words, for the soul there is no conditions. See, Krishna, if you read the first part of the Gita, Krishna is saying there are no conditions for the soul. The soul does not exist within conditions. The soul belongs to the unconditional environment. Think of that, the unconditional environment. There is an environment which is unconditional, and that is called Vaikuntha. Because as soon as you bring in conditions, you bring in anxiety. And if you study conditions, just like for instance, you are living in a house. What is the quality of your life? It depends on the conditions of the house, isn't it? If the roof is leaking, if there's no heating, if the telephone doesn't work, if the gas is leaking, and if there's rats everywhere and there's cockroaches, it may be a house, but it's not exactly free from anxiety, isn't it? Have you ever gone in a house and the tap doesn't work, there's cold water, it's cold, there's no food, you see? So therefore, when the conditions are not favorable, you will suffer. You see? So if you've got a nice house, so I've got a very nice house, I've got hot water, I've got a fridge, television, hi-fi stereo system, you know, I've got nice prasadam on the table, mom smiles every morning or whatever, so many things that come. So that is what we call happiness. But actually, whether it is the good condition or the bad condition, it is all bad, because it's all conditions. It's all conditions. The soul has nothing to do with condition, because that's why we call unconditional. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, sarva dharma prityaja mamekam saranam braja aham tang sarva pavebhyo mukshishyami masuchaha. So Krishna is saying that you simply, the real condition is you simply surrender unto me. Krishna is saying that the real intelligent person, actually the real intelligent person will surrender to God. Why? Not because he's going to get some remuneration, because it's the only intelligent thing to do. If all of these people are trying to control, then surely we can understand that the nature of consciousness is to control. That's the very nature of consciousness. It is a quality of intelligence. The quality of sentient, of a sentient person, is that he wants to control. You understand? An animal has no real function of controlling, but because we are intelligent people, we're controlled. Therefore, surely God must be the most intelligent, because he's doing the biggest amount of controlling. You see? So therefore, what happens in the material world, when we cannot control, we take shelter of someone else who's in more control. Isn't it? Just like, for instance, you are living in society, and if you are threatened by something, you call the police. Isn't it? It's natural, because you need to take shelter. We need to take shelter of higher control. So that's real intelligence. Suppose there's a gang of youths attacking you, and you say, "Ah, the hell with the police, I'll just beat them all up myself." And they've all got guns and knives or whatever. Then afterwards, when the police come and you're all beaten up, they say, "Well, you should have called us," or whatever. So the nature in the material world, actually, the very nature, the very quality in the material world is actually the natural function is to take shelter of something higher. It's a natural function, just like a child naturally takes shelter of the mother, naturally takes shelter of the father. The student naturally takes shelter of the professor. People in society naturally take shelter of the government. You see? And the government, they naturally take shelter of material nature. Ultimately, we all have to take shelter of something higher. So if you study, you will find that everyone is taking shelter. Nobody is actually controlling. Nobody is actually controlling. There is no one on this world who is controlling. Because if you say there is someone who is in control, then they must be able to stop time. What is that King Canute? You read about that in the history of this king? There was one king. He believed himself to be very powerful. So he sat down on the beach and he told his subjects that he would stop the incoming tide. He would stop it. So he sat there and the water got higher and higher until it was over his head. So you can't stop the influence of material energy. So even if someone says they're in control, actually if you study, you'll find that all of their control is relative. Relative to their power, relative to their ability to control. Nobody is in absolute control. It is called, the difference between relative control and absolute control is quite vast. Because let's say you're in control, even if you're in control of half of this planet, or all of this planet, but this planet is only a speck of dust in space. So you're still very relatively in control. You're not in control of the universe. So therefore, if we study, we'll find that actually the intelligent person, he can understand that the material energy is subjecting us to birth, old age, disease, and finally the most humiliating subjection that we all go through, of course, is old age and finally death. old age and death is the greatest embarrassment for anyone. Old age is an embarrassment. Doesn't matter who you are, whether you're president of a country or you're just a road sweeper or whatever. Old age is an embarrassment because what it is actually a manifestation of higher authority. Old age is the manifestation of higher authority, because if you look at time, if you study time, you'll find that time is taking away everything. It's taking away everything. Time I am, Krishna says, the destroyers of these worlds. The function of time is to very gradually take everything away. Not in an abrupt sense, but gradually it takes away. Just like we find in our own physical body, that as you grow in your body, you find that suddenly people find that their hair starts getting taken away, then their teeth start getting taken away, then their physical energy gets taken away, their skin starts taken away. And gradually even the mind starts getting taken away. sometimes we see that even the mind itself is starting to be taken away. So in the material world, the living entity is being plundered by these things. Adidevaka, which means the divine demigods. Demigods means controllers of the universe. Adibhautika means from other living entities, from other people. We are all subjected to other people. Everyone, how many people in this room are working? Must be quite a few people working. You all on the dole? So, England's good for the dole. So the point is that if you look in your life, we are subjected to some other type of control. And even if you say, I'm not controlled by other people, but we are controlled by our minds, where our mind is controlling also. Who can actually say they have full control on their mind? Can anyone say they have full control? How many people have half control of their mind? How many people can actually say that half of the time I'm telling my mind what to do? You see? We're not actually, if you study intelligently, you will understand that actually we are not in control. We're not in control of our bodies. We're not in control of our thoughts. Not really. Because if you study your actual the thinking pattern, the way we function, you'll find that everyone in this room is doing exactly the same things as each other. Isn't it? We're all doing exactly the same things as each other. The four principles. Everyone in this room eats. Anyone doesn't eat? Anyone in this room who doesn't sleep? Does anyone in this room doesn't have any inclination towards sex life at all? And is anyone in this room doesn't fear anything, no anxiety? You see? So if you study the basic pattern, you'll find that every single individual is doing exactly the same things and practically doing them in the same way. So that does not actually tell you that you're free. You're not free, because if you're free, then you would be doing something completely individual. Individual means, as an individual person, you would be doing something completely uniquely. Like how many people in this room are able to sleep on the roof? I mean up in the ceiling, against the ceiling. Instead of sleeping on the floor, how many people sleep on the ceiling? You see, you don't, why not? Why don't you sleep on the ceiling? There's more room sometimes on the ceiling than the floor. You can sleep on the ceiling. You see? So the reason we don't is because we all have to function according to the law of gravity. The law of gravity says that we have to, yet generally we're going to be more comfortable on the floor. So the point is that if you study by every single act that we do, and if you go even further to study, you'll find that what you are doing, all the animals are doing the same thing. Every single animal, if you go amongst the animals, they're all eating, they're all sleeping, they all have families, they're all fearing. So therefore, whether it is in the human species or the animal species, the actual functional aspect of the body is there. And then you'll find that, which the Gita is a wonderful science, you'll find, if you go further, you'll find that every single person in this room has the same mental problems. We all have the same mental problems. You know what the problem is with the mind? We can't control it. That is the problem. Because we haven't controlled the mind, happiness cannot be found. You see? Because the nature of the mind is, the mind actually, the power of the mind is, the mind can be our greatest friend, or it can be our greatest enemy. Because if the mind is absorbed in matter, your body, the body you have now, is actually created from your mind. It's created from your mind. The Gita explains, as the ear carries aroma, the mind carries a conception at the time of death. When you die in this body, You are carrying with you a particular conception of life. That is called a conditional idea due to your karma. You, in this lifetime, you are doing so many things. At the time of death, you are again born into a condition according to your mental state. By combination of the ego of the mind, you will have to take another type of body. So therefore, how important the mind is. And you can go one step further. If you look at the whole city of London, it was created out of people's minds. You're an architect, you know. Where does it come from? Where do you start? You start on the drawing board. The drawing board is in here. You see? So in the material world, the gross is created from the subtle. You understand? The gross is created from the subtle. So the whole Vedic system was that if you master the subtle, you can master the gross. What the Western civilization are thinking, by mastering the gross, you can master the subtle. It's a ridiculous idea. They think that by making machinery, mechanization, that's why they have more and more and more and more sophisticated machines, because they want to bring the gross under the control. You see? But actually you have to bring the subtle under control, because the more you absorb yourself in gross, the more you become gross. You see? The more you become gross. The more you become gross, the less you will actually be able to know who you are. That's why animals, they're gross. If you bring a hog in here now, we have a couple of nice hogs out there. You bring them in here, they're not going to sit down and listen to Bhagavad Gita. You see? Because they're gross. They have these big noses. You see the big nose? Because if you want to use your senses like that, God will give you a big tongue. You can have, sometimes you see these tongues, they're huge. Or a big belly, you can eat 100 kilos. Or you can have big ears, like an elephant. You see? You look at all the species, they are a particular type of consciousness on a particular type of sense. You see? So therefore, the more you meditate on the gross, the more you will become entangled in the gross conditions of birth, old age, disease and death. Therefore Krishna is saying, the Vedic system is you control the subtle. That is the difference between Goswami and Godasa. The word Goswami, Swami means senses. Go means senses and Swami means controller. So the one thing that the individual living entity can do is that he can control his senses. By the grace of God, he can control his senses. So actually we can control our senses if we take shelter of the controller of the senses. You see? Who is the controller? Rishikesha Kesha Sevanam. One, the individual senses are related to the supreme senses. Your senses are there because God has senses. You see, just like this light bulb has light because the sun has light. The quantity of light in the light bulb and the quantity of light in the sun are a vast difference. The power of your senses and God's senses are completely different. When God breathes, the whole universe has come out. When you breathe, what comes out? Does any universes come? Anyone notice that? No. So, the thing is that our breathing and God's breathing are a vast difference. But that does not mean that God does not breathe. Because God has senses, we have senses. Just like everyone knows, we all, each one in this room has a creative ability. We all have a creative ability. But our creation and God's creation are vastly different. You see, man is very very much ready to slap himself on the back or pat himself on the back because he has entered the world of miniaturization, just like these computers. They're all dealing with miniaturization. But did you know that in one lemon tree, there is the ability to produce billions of tons of citric acid. If you take one seed of a lemon, it can produce a tree, isn't it? From a tree, how much acid is coming? How many lemons are coming? From each of those lemons, how many more trees are coming? From each of those trees, how many more trees are coming? From each of those trees, how many more? And this can go on infinity. So from one seed, therefore Krishna says, Bijaham, I am the seed. I am the seed-given father. Just like you are coming from a tiny seed. Everyone in this room was produced from a tiny seed. You see? From a little seed, everything is coming. So therefore, we can understand that this miniaturization is not a new thing. It is actually something that is going on in God's creation, just like a great banyan tree, a massive banyan tree. It is only inside a little seed. If you try to take a banyan tree and put it inside a seed, have you ever tried it? It would be very hard. So therefore, this creation of God, if you study the creation of God, you will find that actually there is an immense, wonderful, this is called achintya shakti. Achintya means inconceivable power. So therefore, the intelligent devotee can understand that actually if I surrender to Rishikesha, if I surrender to Krishna, he will control my senses. The only thing you need to do is surrender. Because he is the creator of your senses. You did not create your senses. Neither did you create the object of the senses. Neither did you create the material phenomena. So therefore, the only necessity, the actual necessity of a devotee is to surrender to Krishna. And in order to do that, we have to give up the false ego of the mind. And that means we have to accept the real ego. Real ego means that I am actually the eternal servant of Krishna. That I am the eternal servant. My business is to serve. Why? Because I'm serving matter anyway. Anyone in this room who says, I don't want to serve God, that's fine. But you have to serve matter. Who hasn't got service in this room? Who's not doing service at the moment? We're doing service to our family, our friends, our company, our school, so many different types of services. And all relationships are based on service. Depending on the quality of your service, you will have a relationship. If you give good service, you'll have a good relationship, just like a man and wife. If they give each other good service, they have a good relationship. As soon as there's breakdown in the service, the relationship breaks down. Isn't it? Divorce. One in four marriages end in divorce. They begin on the principle of service, reciprocation. But the thing is, because of the inability to serve, actually in the material world, the tendency is to exploit. Because there is tendency to exploit, the service quality is very poor. Very poor, isn't it? Because people want to exploit. So therefore, you generally find that in the material world, what appears to be service is really exploitation. But nevertheless, everybody has to render some service to exploit. For you to exploit, you have to serve. You see? Just like if you work for a company and you want to get £300 from that company, you have to wait until they give it to you. If you try to take it, you will become a thief, a criminal, and you will be subjected to the laws of the land. So therefore, you want the money, you don't want the service. You don't join a company because you want to serve it for the next 20 years. You want it because you want to get something from it. In order to do that, you have to serve. And if you want anything in this world, really you have to serve to get it. Even President Clinton now, he's running around America serving America, telling them how great he's going to do this, he's going to open a welfare system, he's going to give them less taxes. And here in this country, the same thing will begin. Please, can I render you nice service? Will you elect me as your governor or whatever? So therefore, the principle of service is unavoidable for the soul. And Krishna is explaining that actually the real elevation of the mind is to surrender the mind to the super soul. The super soul is Krishna within the heart. And if you surrender to the super soul, then one becomes automatically satisfied by virtue of acquired knowledge and realization. This is the real thing which the soul hankers for. Knowledge. Knowledge is the eternal factor by which we can understand who we are, what we are, where we're from, where we're going, who is God. These are the things which are necessity, they are very necessary. And realization is very, very important because realization is the fruit of knowledge. You see? Knowledge is one thing, but realization is the fruit of knowledge. So unless we get realization, we will always be subjected to the weakness of the mind, to the false ego of the mind. But one who is situated in knowledge, he cannot be subjected to the mind. Rather, he can subject the mind to his will, because the soul is more powerful than mind. The soul is more powerful than any material energy because it is para prakriti, it is superior energy. So So we'll stop here if there's any questions at all. Anyone have any questions at all? No, one question.
You mentioned this point about how the subtle energy is more powerful than the gross.
Mm.
So how would that relate to us then?
How would that relate to us?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that the subtle energy is also very vast. It's not something, just like we say in the higher planetary systems, we believe that in the higher planetary systems, the devatas, they are manifestations of the Supreme Lord's energy in the controlling factor. In other words, they have very powerful intelligence. Just like your intelligence is very tiny. We are very tiny. In the material world, we have very small intelligence. Therefore, we have very small creative ability. In the higher planetary systems, they have very powerful intelligence. Therefore, they have very powerful creative ability. So, the subtle ability is in this particular planet, in the Earth planet, the ability of the subtle is very much reduced, particularly in Kali Yuga, very, very reduced ability. So therefore we see that society is becoming more and more gross. Now unfortunately people see that as advancement, but actually it's quite opposite to advancement. It's not advancement at all, it is degradation. Because the more you become, the more you create things. Just like a television is a very good example. You create a television out of your mind. Okay, some man sat down, worked out how radio waves work, how television works, whatever, and he created a television. And millions of people now spend hours glued to this box, totally wasting their time. Total, utter waste of time, useless time. It has no fruits whatsoever. Just like I don't know what they watch now, but I know that some of the things like Carnation Street or what is it, is watched by 18 to 20 million people. 20 million people watching about some street in Manchester. Now how can you justify that as being any way fruitful in the least? Has anyone ever finished watching Carnation Street and thought, wow, now I know how the atom works. Or now I know why I'm in this world. You see? So if you study, you'll find out what they think is, they think when they come home at night, oh, wonderful, I can sit down and watch the television. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that amazing? Actually, the television is telling you, sit down and watch. You're not, how many people can actually, you look, study in households, how many people can avoid watching the television? That's when you're in control. Because you're dictating when you watch. Very few people have that sort of control. They come home and the television says, sit down, turn me on and watch. That's it. And then 10 hours later, they go, they try and, oh, got it off. You know, they creep up there to try and turn it off. So the point is that's just one example. There are many examples. There are many examples. In the material world, we make so many different adjustments. I mean, I'll give you an example. We may say, for instance, that we say a boy, and then he wants to meet a girl. Okay, so he looks around and he sees a girl, falls in love or whatever, and then look at how many things go on from that looking. He was just looking around and suddenly, boom, that leads to that, leads to that, leads to that. Next minute he's got a mortgage, he's got overdraft, he's got a car, he's got children, he's got a washing machine to buy, he's going up and down every Saturday with some pram, buying things and trying to get this and that. He's in total anxiety, everything's going this, that. So in one sense, maybe he shouldn't have looked. You see? He'd have saved himself a lot of headache. So Vedic culture was based on that principle, that not that you simply do all these things without questioning, because actually all of these things that you do in the material world, every single thing you do is implicating you more and more in the complexities. Just like a car, so many people think they forget from A to B, a car is much better than a horse. or whatever, or walking even sometimes, or a bicycle. But actually, if you look at the whole complexity of a car, it's an enormous complex arrangement. Enormously complex. And then on top of that, there's all the adverse conditions that are involved with that thing. England is becoming just like big roads and motorways and roads everywhere, and cars are dashing backwards and forwards and everywhere. So now people, whereas in the past they used to just walk into the local village, do their job and come home, now they drive 30, 40, 50, even 100 miles to get to work, just to get to work. They don't even want to go to work, and they drive 100 miles to get there. And then they work all day, and then they have to drive all the way back, and there's traffic jams, and things. And here these things are going off too. Before you used to go out and find one. Now they're everywhere. So that means that you even get people ringing you didn't even want to ring you. You give people your number, and they think, oh God, I gave him my number, now he's going to be ringing me day and night. So all of these things increase the anxiety. But they also have a wonderful ability to make us feel that we've advanced. I'm advanced. I've got a portable phone. What's advanced about having a portable phone? You see, there's nothing advanced about it. It's more headache, because what you've got to do is you've got to answer it when it rings. It's usually a lot of the time people you didn't even want to talk to anyway. So you end up talking to them. You're paying for the call, and then you're paying for the hire. It's also giving you radioactivity into your ear. Now they're saying, oh, maybe it's causing radioactivity in the ear. They don't know. So all of these things, they're there, but they should be seen in their proper perspective. They do not actually bring happiness. They create this artificial feeling that we are actually progressing. But at the end of it all said and done, after 80 years of doing all these things, what's the final conclusion? Final conclusion is everything's faded away, everything goes away, and then we have to face the reality that we have to leave this body. And then your portable phone's useless. Unless you can ring up an ambulance to come and take you to the hospital. You see? And we have to face the reality that we have to leave this body. And then your portable phone's useless. Unless you can ring up an ambulance to come and take you to the hospital. You see? So in reality, the gross can never satisfy the subtle. There's nothing external that will actually give you pleasure, because you are an eternal living entity. You are spirit soul. You are consciousness. Just like as soon as consciousness leaves the body, there's no more television, no more portable phones, no more holidays in Spain or whatever. The soul is gone. Everything's gone. All it leaves behind is a carcass, some bones and skin. The whole lot is not worth a fig. You just throw it in the dustbin. Ultimately, what's left behind, what you've got to judge is you've got to judge a thing by its result. The result of 80 years or 90 years on this planet means you leave behind something which they dig and throw in the ground, or they give it to the vultures. It's of no value whatsoever. It's not even worth 50p. I don't know, anyone here would buy a dead body for 50p? Anybody want one? But that same body, when consciousness is there, is so important, is so significant. If one finger is cut off, they'll bring a helicopter ambulance, take you to hospital, try and stick it back on, do so many things. But as soon as consciousness is gone, they don't care a fig. There's not a fig. They simply, that's it. So the point is that the civilization is based upon the external manipulation of matter. It is an artificial society. It will never bring happiness. It will only bring more and more and more anxiety. So therefore, within that, one has to cultivate internally. This is Krishna consciousness. We have to actually cultivate our relationship with Krishna, with God, because that thing ultimately is the only thing that will be important when we're leaving this body. Where we're going next. What is our next destination? And that next destination will be carried by the subtle body. Your subtle body is going to carry you to your next body. So if your subtle body is not ready for that, you're going to end up anywhere. You could end up anywhere. You can be thrown anywhere by the powerful forces of time. You see, so therefore it behooves one that one gets his subtle body ready. And that preparation is the whole purpose of life, because the human form of life is the facility to go back to home, back to Godhead in this lifetime. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.